Can we have impact? Can we contribute to this access to healthcare and improve the diagnostics part and make it available to as many patients as possible, ultimately saving lives?
Hi, I'm Alex, and welcome to the X-Health Show, where I talk to visionaries behind the latest innovations in healthcare for the extra health of the future. We're in Schlieren, on the outskirts of Zurich, Switzerland, following the industry signpost straight to where diagnostic startups grow. Melanie Areger is the CEO and co-founder of Avelo, a natural-born entrepreneur with experience in the diagnostics, medical device and biotech industry. She recharges while running marathons in the High Alps. Avelo is a Swiss startup that develops Avelo Collect, a breath aerosol collector. They aim at detecting tuberculosis and lower respiratory tract infections, the ones that cause pneumonia, from the breath. No nasal swab, no sputum, no blood sample. You'll hear how tricky it is to detect bacteria and viruses in the breath, why so many pneumonia cases are deadly, why we still have tuberculosis epidemic, what is an electrospun nanofiber filter, and more. Melanie, it totally makes sense to analyze pathogens in the breath, so like viruses and bacteria. Why no one did it before?
So it's not true to say that no one did it before. Mm-hmm. There are several ones, especially also in academia. But it's quite tricky, especially if you think about the time and you need to sample a patient. I mean, if you did it for hours and hours, yes, you would certainly capture enough. But then to do it in a time and also a convenient way for patient, that's a bit the challenge. And also some, or I would say most of the breath companies, they focus more on so-called volatile organic compounds, VOCs. That's kind of the... Simply put, the reaction of your body to a certain disease, and then you have these compounds coming out of your mouth, and it's not the disease. We focus on the pathogen and the DNA, RNA of the pathogens, and the compounds are kind of the reaction of your body. So it's not the pathogens per se, but it's kind of more a reaction. And that reaction can be, you have a similar reaction depending on the different pathogens. But when you feel sick with a respiratory illness, you have very, very similar symptoms. So it's not a very, you cannot tell which exact pathogen makes you sick. So in that space, there is a lot going on, less so in the space we are in. But hopefully, independent of us, hopefully, it's going to be now more common as technology has evolved. PCR testing in our case has improved and so forth. So there needed to be changes also and developments in the technology to detect those pathogens in the little amount they are there.
So it's tricky basically to detect, as you're saying, these bacteria and viruses in the breath. It's not that easy.
It's not easy. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll come back to that. But how did you basically sign up to develop it?
So what we did, my co-founder and I, Toby, in summer 2020, so in the midst of the pandemic, we systematically screened the so-called target product profiles, for example, from the World Health Organization. These are profiles where it says what an unmet medical need is and how the ideal product, that's why target product profile, should look like. And we came across breath as an ideal specimen. And we found that idea so intriguing. And we believe that because it's from this TPP and this unmet need that there is something behind it. Yeah, this made us then start the company to work on a solution in terms of technology and so forth, but also financial support from investors and so forth.
So Tobias Brugger, you just mentioned him. He's your chief technology officer and your co-founder, right?
Yes.
And he's got some background in engineering, biological chemistry.
Yes.
So yeah, he already worked in that field a bit, right?
Yes, he has. And he's very talented in coming up with solutions and working on this technology field. So we did have him with all his experience and expertise and also talent, because engineering per se also requires some talent to work on the solutions. And he does have more than 10 years of professional experience in this field. And so he knew exactly how to tackle it and started to work on the technology.
What diseases are we speaking about?
So we are tackling the lower respiratory tract infections causing pneumonia and also tuberculosis. So some people say it's kind of a lower tract infection, but it's a special bird, so to speak. And when you look at the severity of the disease, pneumonia is, according to the World Health Organization, the leading cause of death in children under 5 years old. And the fourth leading cause of death worldwide. In 2019, there were 2.5 million deaths. Mm-hmm. And one third thereof was in children under five. So it really affects the very vulnerable, and also then the elderly.
Yeah. So this is actually the unmet need, right? This is where it comes from.
Exactly. And then when you dig into the statistics of tuberculosis, the World Health Organization estimated in 2022, there were roughly 10.6 million cases and 1.3 million deaths in 2022 alone.
You know, I actually, when I was preparing for this episode, I actually also dug into some statistics, and, you know, I mean, they are stunning, actually. So we don't really realize, you know, how prevalent tuberculosis is. There is this one, like in 2018, one quarter of the world's population was thought to have a latent infection of tuberculosis. Like one quarter? I mean, man. So it's like the world south, right? That actually has the majority of the cases now.
Or as they would say, the global south. It's a typical global south topic. And the reason is kind of obviously the access there to healthcare, and healthcare meaning proper diagnostics and also proper treatment, is obviously much lower than compared to the more developed countries where the financial resources are in place. And then even more, the living conditions in those countries, the poverty related poor housing conditions where transmission is more easily done, or also air pollution is a factor, or even the poor nutrition, because people cannot afford to have very healthy diets, and that then does not really help to have a proper and strong immune system. So all this kind of explains quite a bit why it's so prevalent, in particular in the global south, because TB is curable.
Yeah.
But if you don't have access to the healthcare system and to diagnosis and treatment, then it can be deadly, which is really, really sad.
And with the lower tract infections and pneumonia, what are the problems there, or how are they treated now? Like, how do we actually can? Well, we know a bit. I'm asking this question, but we all were tested for COVID, for example, right? So there are swabs, right, used at the moment. Yeah. What else is there?
So for in terms of treatment, typically when it's a bacterial infection, and tuberculosis is a bacterial one, you would get antibiotics. And for the viral infections, because the lower respiratory tract infections can be viral, bacterial, or sometimes it's even co-infections or even fungal infections. So there are antivirals. So there is medicine in place. And depending on your immune system, it's not always TB excluded, but adults, if we have an infection, we may be able to just by being at home and resting and so forth to overcome it. But if it's really severe, then you should take medicine. And for this, it's really important to understand what causes the infection. So if you, in case of bacterial infection, if you get antibiotic, that it's not just a broad spectrum one, but it's really a targeted one, because otherwise you have exactly what we are currently facing, this increasing antibiotic resistance, which some people call it the next global health problem worldwide. It affects the entire population, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. I can think of like why we have or we use these broad spectrum antibiotics, because people are not tested really, right? For like what kind of bacteria they have. Or it's like, okay, let's start with that, and then we'll see if the body reacts, right?
Exactly.
Is it the way it works?
Exactly. Usually. So when it comes to diagnostics, because that was also the second part of your former question, so it depends a bit on the healthcare system and obviously the disease and everything. But if we do it in a very generalized way, you would go to the doctor. The doctor does a physical clinical examination. If there is a suspicion of a lung infection, they would listen to your lung. They would take some blood where you see, is there an inflammation? And if there is one, they it's usually assumed to be related to a bacterial infection. And then you provide or give antibiotics, but you don't really know what causes the infection specifically, or if it's even a co-infection and there may be a viral infection on top that is more severe. And sometimes they also do chest x-ray depending on the setup. And nowadays more and more, and COVID certainly gave this a push, the PCR testing, so that you would take, and with the lower tract infections, you would usually take a sputum sample or sometimes even do a lavage where you put a tube into your throat and wash out the lung.
Oh, wait. Wow. What's that?
So it's basically they really, and it's not done in the doctor's office, obviously. Mm. So you would really put a tube into your throat and wash out the lung and just check and get some material from your lung. And then you would run your diagnostic assay in the lab to understand exactly what causes it.
So it's probably not the first choice, right? This probably happens when someone doesn't respond to this whatever was
the treatment,
or she treated before.
Yeah, or usually, I mean, they are usually already intubated, so you already have the intubation. So, but I mean, there are different cases, and depending on the clinician, but usually, yes, you would not go with this procedure right away. You would try to avoid it if possible, because it has its own risks.
Right. Just a note here to you guys listening. We are not doctors here. So neither Melanie nor I, we are not doctors. So please do not consider it medical advice. I mean, anything we say, right? Thank you.
And also that we are being very generic here, because it's in different healthcare settings, different disease, and what else is going on in the patient also plays a role, just to say that. But we try to be on a high level.
Right. Why are these lower tract pathogens missed? Or like, what's not, yeah, why this is this unmet need, right?
Mm-hmm. So one thing is, if you look at the sampling, if you do a swab, we probably all know this now after COVID, when we did, some call it brain biopsy, if you put the swab correctly into your nose. So there you capture mainly the upper tract infections, but not the ones in the lung. And if you want to go down, and for example, sputum is a very hard sample. Some people cannot produce sputum, or if then you have to try several times, or you have to induce it with salt. Or then if you get it, it's quite dirty. So you have to clean it. So it's a rather dirty, complex sample. And that is why the World Health Organization in the target product profile said we need non-sputum based testing. And the lavage, we talked about it, it has its own risks. So the sampling easily available, and that's where we come in. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, but I think in many of the cases, and tuberculosis is one where there are statistics. So there are 3 to 4 million people. So I mentioned the 10.6 million cases per year, but actually diagnosed are only 6.7 million let's say roughly 7 million. So you have a gap of 3 to 4 million. And yes, the gap can be because you don't have a proper sample, but the key reason why you have a gap is the access to healthcare. Mm. That's clear. So
these people would not basically go to a healthcare provider. So
yeah, or don't
doctors,
yeah,
or
don't have it. The physical distance is too far. They don't have the means to go to that facility, the nearest one, and so forth. And so let's say if you do have access, then the sample type is one factor to explain. But on a broad scale, and the large numbers is really to get people into the healthcare system. And there our vision with our easy sampling, with Avelo Collect, our breath sampling device, is really that you could do it at the point of need, so to speak, where patients are, and then you would take the sample back to the lab. But it takes some time to get to that point.
Yeah, I learned that your co-founder, so Tobias, he actually worked or contributed to papers that were trying to find a new way of detecting tuberculosis. So like in blood or in urine.
Urine, yeah.
Obviously, breath is like something completely else, right? It's even easier. But I mean, it's technologically, it's not that easy, right?
Exactly.
Because we're coming, from like also the basic diagnosis is an x-ray. Like I remember there were some regular x-rays some time ago. And now Yeah. So why didn't you focus on this, you know, blood or urine?
I guess it's our curiosity and the drive to do something exciting, because when we came, he has worked in urine and he knows all the challenges there, but with breath, this was a new challenge and we felt like it sounds so easy on paper. Can we not find a solution there? Hmm. And it probably was or is the curiosity and those listeners who know Star Trek, the statement to boldly go where no one has gone before, this kind of drive and motivation for us to tackle something challenging. And I guess that's an overarching theme why we started the company, because we did have really good jobs. We both liked the companies we worked before, but we said, let's jump into cold water and tackle this challenge. So I guess it's more that aspect.
What was the situation? It's like, how did you actually select? Because you said that you were actually focusing on these target profile products. And then how did you select them? Was there any, like, you both decided, like, this one is something extraordinary or something that we can do really well? Or, like, how did you really, you know, decide about that?
It's funny, we had several workshops and we went through them and said, oh, this could be interesting. And then we told ourselves, yeah, let's, the ones that we find exciting. And the second criteria was actually, do we have some sort of a background knowledge? Do we have skills to do something in that space? Because if you try something new and you don't have any previous experience, you can also do that, of course. And it's great, but it's much harder than if you do have some background that and expertise. And we talked about this at the beginning, right? If he did bring in all the expertise in that field, that's why we said, okay, that's certainly a big factor why we would select one over the other. And then it was really this, when we came across this one where breath was mentioned, it was like, wow. This sounds really exciting. This sounds really challenging. So,
okay. Yeah. You jumped basically on it. Yeah. You said, like, both of you had the job. So how did you decide, oh, were you keeping your jobs and then, you know, trying to figure out, like, how to work on this breath solution, like, in meantime? Oh.
We'll be right back. This episode is brought to you by The Exhale Show and me, Alex. If you still haven't, please hit follow at the top. That'll help me bring more of these visionaries to you. Thanks a lot. Stay awesome now. Back to the episode.
Usually I would say, yeah, that's probably the way you should do it. If you want to be on safe side is maybe too strong of a word, but let's say on rather the safer side. But we said we are both all in people, and we said if we want to do it properly, we really need to dig in. And he obviously did the technology part and I was working on the business case. And we said doing this in the evening at like 8 after a hard day and with your mind being completely full with all the other things at work, it can work and also do the work on the weekend, obviously. But it's if you're all in, you feel like you're torn between two worlds. And this is something we didn't want to have. So we said, okay, we did cash our bank accounts because we said that's what we are willing to do. Cash a bank account with that money. We give ourselves a year of time to see where we get, what we can make out of this. And to dedicate our time to this because we wanted to make it work, or we still want to make it work. And we realized it takes the time and resources and you cannot do it on the side. There are some great ideas where you probably can do it on the side and build it up. And then once it starts to fly, you can then basically quit the job. But in our case, with what we wanted to do, we realized it doesn't work.
When was it?
In summer 2020, we had the brainstorming. And then when we got to that idea about or saw that breath one and we got excited, it was a Saturday afternoon. And then on Monday, Toby texted me on WhatsApp and said he just quit his job. No pressure there. And I was like, okay, wow. And I said, okay, I will jump with him and let's do this. But then until we actually officially started was then 2021, because we both had some time to to quit our jobs and so forth.
Right. Okay. So how do you actually envision it? You already have the name, right? It's Avelo Collect that you work in. It's still in development, right?
Yes.
But from the patient perspective, like, how do you see it?
So our goal is it's a collection tube. So you as a patient would exhale into this tube, depending on how quickly and fast you want to do, or if you take your time, maybe 2-3 minutes up to 4-5 minutes. And then we have a smart mechanism. So in that tube, you have a filter technology, which would then capture the pathogen. And then we have this smart mechanism to then bring it into a standard lab tube. So probably most of the listeners, did have to do once or maybe several times the PCR testing with the swab. So you did do the swab, and then the healthcare person put it into the standard lab tube, this swab, and then there was this breaking of the swab and then closing the lab tube. And we basically have a similar mechanism where we would then bring the content from the collector into the standard lab tube. And from that point on, it's then going the standard workflow, PCR workflow.
Okay. And what's the filter in it? Because is it like the actually the main part of the device that allows to grasp the bacteria and viruses?
Yeah, it's a key part, because maybe if we compare it with face masks, every good face mask basically also has, the mask is kind of a filter, and then you would capture the pathogen in that face mask. But then the good thing about the face mask is you don't get them off. So the pathogens stick in there. And we have with our technology a smart mechanism to then get it off. So the filter is in a way that we can also get it off and then get it into a PCR reaction.
Okay. So it's a nanofiber filter. That's how it's called.
Correct.
So is it something like you developed, or is it something that, where did that technology come from?
So it was part of when Toby started to work on the product and thinking about searching for really good filters and technologies to produce them. And he came across one such technology, production technology, is electrospinning, where you have this very thin fibers you can then produce. And we worked and started, and it was great back then, with the ZHAW, with the group of Professor Christian Adelhardt. And he was, from day one, he supported us greatly, and we could work with him. But the technology was driven and developed mainly by us, but he obviously helped us. And then we also got an InnoSwiss project where we could further then work on this.
Now, from the lab perspective, like, how do you basically turn the breath into something that you can analyze with a PCR?
So when you take the sample with the blow tube, we have a mechanism where you would then screw on the lab tube, and you would get the content from the collector into that lab tube. So when the lab gets the sample, so to speak, they get the standard lab tube they already know. And they would, and the idea is now that they would process this as they do today when they get a standard lab tube. So for them, it shouldn't be a difference compared to today. And that was for us the key focus on. Fun story. Initially, we had the idea that we would develop a complete breath test, including the machine and everything. And then we realized the machine part, the detection side, the PCR testing. There are so many great machines out there. With COVID, obviously, it gave a big push to make those machines cheaper, faster, better. And we realized, and was also help of our InnoSwiss coach, who said, why don't you focus on the innovative part of that, the sampling aspect, and make it compatible with the existing workflows and setups. And then we did rewrite the business plan a few times, but that was one of the key things, to focus really on the sampling part instead of providing the whole sample to answer, with the idea that there is an existing healthcare system and setup and capacities out there. Why don't we use them?
So how did you actually approach this proof of concept? So you had this idea that you can actually test the aerosols, basically, right? So the breath, and you had the idea how this could work. You had the filter. Now, how did you test it?
Very good question, because obviously when you develop something where you would use blood or urine, there are you can take it out of the fridge. There are biobanks for that. And obviously breath you cannot take out of the fridge. So one aspect was in the lab. We did some lab experiments. We had some aerosol simulation setups, or we still do. And then we knew very soon that we have to, once we, I think it was a product iteration or prototype iteration 17 or 18, we then took in a so-called clinical proof of concept study, because we knew we have to test it with real patients. Once we felt that it's safe enough for the patients, we did cover our basics there. We went into two proof of concept studies. One was with tuberculosis and one with COVID. And the idea was that we would have a bacteria and a virus as a proof of concept. And the focus was on the so-called biological plausibility. Is it possible to capture pathogens from aerosols in a meaningful time? And we did see where it worked well. We also found out, obviously, that's the interesting, exciting part about when you build something and when you create something, sometimes you discover things by accident. And we did realize and discover things by accident where we can improve. And we are now working on this in our product development efforts.
So the first thing, what is the meaningful time? And you mentioned that, you know, for the second time. So how long are we speaking about breathing into the tube?
So maybe giving the question back, what do you think would be, if you were sick, what would be okay for you? How long would you be willing to sit there and exhale in such a collector if you were sick?
I don't know. It doesn't really, I breathe anyway, right? It's just one breath is not enough, I can think.
Not enough,
no,
definitely.
Right.
Not.
So how many could be?
So depending on how quickly you do it or slowly you do it, you can do it in 2-3 minutes or maybe 4-5 minutes. But then when you think about the whole procedure at the doctor's office, there is usually not much time.
Yeah. It's like a 15-minute appointment. Yeah, and exactly. If there are a lot of patients, you can squeeze it to like 8 minutes, let's say, right?
Exactly. So that's one. Although you can sometimes, depending on the encounter, and also if you're in the hospital versus doctor office, it's a bit different. But sometimes you have a bit more time because you may have to do some admin stuff or sampling time. And then until you see the doctor, there is some time in between. But we would say we have it in our product specification or target what we want to achieve, that it's certainly 2-3 minutes or maybe below 4-5 minutes to achieve, to because after that it gets really, really long.
So this is the challenging part that you mentioned. So shortening of this time when you can collect enough of, you know, this what particles basically in the breath.
And this time, ideally, you said, I mean, wishful thinking would be one breath, because that would be super easy for everyone to do. But to get it down to as little time as possible, while, and there are so many different factors playing in, and every human being, we are different, right? Some people exhale more, some people less. We know it from the pandemic. There were some super spreaders. They obviously had a high viral load. They were breathing out, and maybe others not. So there are so many variabilities you need to factor in to make it into a robust product. So that's not so easy. And that's getting back to your first question, is why has it not done before? Because it's not easy.
And then, so who did you collaborate with to have it tested? Because I can imagine you also had to convince, you know, some hospital settings to allow you to access their patients.
So some of them I cannot talk about because it's under NDA, but we did collaborate with academia and industry partners and their related connections to the hospitals. So in academia, we did have hospitals also in South Africa where we could access the patients together with them. In Germany, we did it with an industry partner who had access to healthcare system. So we knew from the beginning we needed great partners. And when we approached them, the nice part for us was that we actually got very, from the beginning, high interest. There was, I cannot remember if there was ever a partner we approached who said, no, not at all. Because it's something new and interesting and exciting, we did hit some open doors, which is for us, it was super and highly appreciated. But it can be in another case that this is not the case, right? But for us, it was that part, fortunately, was not so difficult.
So what was the feedback that you received? You mentioned already there were like a few pivots that you did, or like something that you work on now?
The feedback in terms of, we put a lot of focus on usability, because for us it was, one thing is to develop a product that works, that obviously needs to work. Yes, that's clear, and needs to perform. That's also very clear. But then if it's very difficult for the patients or then the healthcare, you ask this question on how the labs process it, or how is the workflow. If it's super difficult for patients, healthcare providers to use it, then you have a lot of resistance when it comes to getting the product into the market. It may be technologically perfect, but then if the usability is low, it's very tricky. So from the beginning, we focused on this biological plausibility, kind of on that aspect, but at the same time also on the usability to make this happen and to develop a product that is easy to use.
Do you focus on any special bacteria or any special viruses, or like how do you approach that? Do you have like selected viruses and bacteria, or can you like find anything?
So when we started, obviously Toby has a tuberculosis background, so he has a great network there. That was one of the reasons why we focused on that area. And then COVID, it was easy because there were COVID patients around. And now the idea, so tuberculosis, we keep with tuberculosis, you have one specific bacteria and the disease, and it's in that sense straightforward. For the lower respiratory tract infections, it's not that easy because there are so many different viruses and bacteria. And that's why we want to do or work with a so-called multiplex panel, where you detect different viruses and bacteria on the same panel. And we would use those panels that are existing out there commercially available. And those panels obviously have different selection criteria, but the ones that are most common, the ones that are very severe, those bacteria and viruses are on that panel.
So now the ignorant question. So that's on the lab part, not on the what you collect on the filter, right?
And our goal is, if you ask that, so our goal is really that it doesn't matter which virus or bacteria, it's the same collector. Mm-hmm. But then to make it compatible with the different assays and PCR systems, that's then the challenging part for us, to have a universal product like a urine container or blood tube that is so universal you can use it for the different testing systems. And that's something we are working on, and certainly something we need to prove that this works.
I can imagine, like, why would these clinics, you know, sign up to test it? Because it's so incredibly, well, easy then, right, to just let patients breathe into the tube. Okay, so that's awesome. Now, you have just received grants to, you know, work more on these technologies. Could you tell a bit more about these grants, and like, how do you want to, well, make it happen, really, you know? So bring it to the clinics, and where, these are so many questions now, you know?
So on the grant side, we have different ones, and we have two with academic consortium. It's not yet public, but it's more focused on the TB space, not only, but mainly on the TB space.
The tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis space, exactly. And then we have this Eurostars project, where we work with two companies, and there we would focus more on the lower respiratory tract infections. And then the same for the InnoSwiss, where we focus more on those. So the idea of all these different grants is that we do have different clinical studies to understand or also mitigate risks, because we use different PCR systems, different healthcare settings, and different diseases. And because from our point of view, we want to show the versatility of the collector. So that's why we are trying to do those different things. Yet it's not that easy we are a team right now of seven. Yes, we are actively recruiting more, but it's, and the partners also have resources there, but it still means that we have to make sure we can deliver on those projects and all the parts come together.
Who's on the team now? I'm asking about the roles, actually. Is it mostly R&D, as mm-hmm. I can imagine?
Mm-hmm. So we have our great R&D team. So we have Toby, obviously, and then we have Katie. She has a background in epidemiology and she's taking care of the clinical studies. We have Harshita. She's focusing on the molecular assays, on the PCR side of things. We have Patricia. She is our expert in the nanofiber filters. And Martina, she's our senior engineer, bringing everything into a product. And then Xuan is helping us in the lab. And we are now recruiting. So on my side, on the business side, we are now recruiting two positions more on the QM side as well as business development clinical side. To us, it's so amazing to see, or especially to me, because I'm talking here, but actually all the work gets done by the team in the lab and when they go to the clinical sites. And it's how we can be successful is only with our team. So I'm very, very proud of them. And saying this because I want to contribute to say thank you for all their hard work.
Yeah. So what they do, they go to the lab, they test it, they fail, they test it, they fail, they test it, they fail. And I, you know, repeat it until they actually succeed in the test, right?
Exactly. And having this persistence and resilience and then to get up again and be so come to work motivated again the next day and do it and help us in our mission to what we want to achieve, this impact. And it does motivate me a lot. So speaking of giving me energy, it's really when I see the team and what they accomplish on a daily level. And even if it's a step back, but then maybe the day after it's two steps forward, it gives me a lot of energy and I'm very, very proud of them.
Are there any like dates that you're focusing on? So in terms of bringing the product to the market?
We'll be right back. I want to say thank you for listening to this episode. If you find it interesting and feel particularly generous today, leave a review, hit this star rating. I'll be able to continue with the X-Health show for you. 3, 2, 1, and back to the episode.
So if everything goes well, the idea is that we will start our clinical validation studies in Q3, kind of saying ready for the flu season. And then in 2025 that we conclude the studies and then would work on a market pilot together with a PCR partner and a clinical lab and then work towards the market. In the between, we are now considering and see if we can make this work to come up with a so-called early access program where we would make the collector available to clinical researchers and just to drive also the clinical evidence and make it available. But it's the plans, we are discussing them at the moment. Let's see how and when we can do this.
Right. What are the challenges right now?
Challenges right now. So obviously product development and to get the product, our goal is to get a CE marking mid this year in the lowest risk class, to get the product ready, transfer to manufacturing, that all the pieces come together and work together so that we can then start in time for the flu season. Then certainly right now recruiting, finding the right talent with people who fit to the team, where fit to our culture and to what we do. We are looking for impact driven, passionate people. As a startup, you don't have all the means like a bigger company. And we realized in the diagnostics space, there are not so many people that have previous experience in diagnostics. Medical device, yes, you find pharma also, but really in diagnostics, it's not that easy. So that's certainly a challenge we have right now. And then I'm currently raising for our Series A round. And I think it's not unknown to the listeners that it's currently a challenging environment to raise funds as a startup. And so I guess probably I could list you 10 more challenges, but these are probably the key ones.
Okay, so what is like the success for Avelo? Like how do you envision success?
To me,
it's a big vision, right?
That's a good keyword, because I was going to say there are two kind of successes. The one is the little wins, which help you to get going every day because it's a challenge. And usually you solve one problem and the next already waits around the corner. And just the little wins where you maybe completed a successful experiment in the lab, or we submitted the proposal and then got the news that we received it. Or if, in my case, for example, if I'm chasing an investor and trying to get a hold of the person, and then after five emails, finally the person responds. So kind of these little wins that help you and celebrating those little steps and successes to just make progress on a weekly, daily, monthly basis. But then on the longer term, the success is really for us the reason why Toby and I started the company is, can we have impact? Can we contribute to this access to healthcare and improve the diagnostics part and make it available to as many patients as possible, ultimately saving lives? So that's kind of the very long-term vision, and we want to contribute to that.
And it's kind of also like a real serious mission that you embarked on, because that's, it touches on millions of lives and actually an epidemic. And also, well, you know, this danger of antimicrobial resistance. So, well, it's kind of huge. Like, how do you recharge basically, you know, with that, all this chasing, trying to put the puzzles together, you know, solving one problem after another?
Recharging, certainly one thing that helps. I mean, I'm a passionate runner, so to me, it really helps to go out in nature, spend some time by myself and recharge in that area. Also with my family time there. And then ultimately with our team, I think it's really something, we got that feedback from the team that they said, hey, we don't really celebrate that much, but we should and need to celebrate the little wins and successes, and this gives back a lot of energy. And when we achieved something in the team and then can really be proud of those steps, because there will be so many steps we need to take and so many challenges we need to overcome. But from time to time, take a pause and say, this is what we have achieved. Now let's take that in for a moment, get the energy from that, and then get up again and tackle the challenges ahead.
So before the recording, you mentioned that you also take part in races, in marathons and half marathons. Like, do you celebrate after that?
Good question. Yeah. Yes and no, maybe. Sometimes, depending on how I felt during the race, if I felt great, then yes. And if I felt not so great, then less. But I participate there just because I like this atmosphere with all the runners and yeah, especially if there are spectators along the course, then it's kind of super motivating. And yeah, just doing something where you have to push through, and it helps really with perseverance and resilience. So in that sense, yeah, short answer is yes and no, to be honest.
Was there any special event that you could tell about?
I think there were, I had the luck, I had many, many nice races, but one particular one I liked is the Jungfrau Marathon. It actually starts in Interlaken and it goes all the way up to Kleine Scheidegg. Back then in the days when I did it, now they have it a bit higher up, and it's the elevation you do is 1,800 meter or now a little bit more.
That's amazing. And this is still marathon, right? It's so we're speaking marathon. Actually Swiss Alps, right?
Swiss Alps. But the amazing part is really the stunning view on Eiger, Mönch and Jungfrau. When you get that to the last part of the, it's 42K, right? And you get to maybe 39 and then you see it. If it's a beautiful day, you're super exhausted, but you get this stunning view and it gives so much energy back. And it's amazing. So it's one of the things why I love to be in Switzerland, the Alps, and they gave me a lot of energy.
But obviously people who take part in it, they are already acclimatized, right? You can't start like that, you know, and go into like over 2,000 meters, or can you?
Ah, you can. So, I mean, the key part is to prepare for the marathon to do that and previously to do some hikes. But the altitude with the 2,000 is usually not, you can feel it. Probably, but I would say the challenge is more really the 42K with the elevation in combination, because it's quite exhausting and it takes obviously longer than if you did a flat marathon, just to have the training. And usually the last part of the marathon, you would be hiking, you would be speed hiking, and just to have the stamina and that you trained before to make it to the top.
Okay, so are there only the views that keep you motivating, or what keeps you actually motivated to run further?
So it's definitely the audience, the spectators along the course. In the case of the Jungfrau Marathon, they have different, also music and so many, and also where they provide you with food, and then the people who help there, they motivate you, and then the runners themselves. Usually it's really motivating each other. And if you feel like I'm super exhausted, then someone passes you and says, come on, keep going, you can do this.
Oh, so there's also like
this community.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it's a little bit different when you are in the elite field, because it's more of a competition. But when you're not, then it's, yeah, all the runners along with you suffering the same as you do, and then doing this and achieving this together. We also, when we go, my husband and I, we have this little thing we call racecation. So when we go on vacation, we like to go to the US in particular, and then we check if there is a race there.
Oh.
And then we participate, because it makes us feel kind of local if you're there, because you're part of their daily life, and it's not being so much a tourist, but really kind of a local, and run with the locals there and see how they do it. Yeah. Honestly, I have to say, in the US, they celebrate a bit more than in the early mornings. Usually the races are in the early mornings, and you at 10, when you're done, you get a beer and pizza and so forth. So it's really cool.
All right. So what are just the next steps? So immediate steps for Avelo now?
So our immediate steps is to finalize our product development, to get to the CE mark, as mentioned, and then start the clinical validation studies. And with that, alongside, to close the financing round and take it to the next level.
Okay, so thank you very much, Melanie. I mean, the future really sounds, well, kind of amazing, you know, to be able to collect, well, pathogens from breath aerosol, basically. So I'm looking forward to it. I'll be definitely following you. And you guys, if you want to follow Avelo and Melanie, please go to avelolife.com, which is AVELOlife.com. Thank you again.
Thank you, Alex, for giving me this chance.
I'm totally impressed by the audacity of researchers turned startup founders, doctors turned entrepreneurs, or ordinary parents turned healthcare innovators. People battling the battles that no one fought before for the extra health of the future. So if you see a startup posting on LinkedIn, show them some love, hit like, comment, that's fabulous. If you have a couple drops more of that altruism, follow the Exhale Show, leave a review here. I'll be able to bring more of these visionaries to you. So a big thank you. You're awesome. See you next week.
The information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. If you have any medical questions, please consult your healthcare practitioner. The opinions on the show are Alex's or her guests. The podcast does not make any responsibility or warranties about guest statements or credibility. While the podcast makes every effort to ensure that the information shared is accurate, please let us know if you have any comments, suggestions, or corrections.